All right, City Council will come back to order, and we have a very, very prestigious and important task. I move the election of Commissioner Dan Saltzman to be the president of the Portland City Commission, otherwise known as the Portland City Council.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussions or objections? You can't object. You can't object.
No. Are we getting some presentation on this?
I think we have a PowerPoint slide presentation on all the good reasons why Dan should be president. It's 50 pages long. Please call the vote.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye. Say that. Tentatively.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Congratulations. Give him the plaque.
It pains me to do this. Dan, was it? Congratulations.
The dictatorship is over officially. Thank goodness.
Sanity has returned to the council.
The oppressive regime. Mr. Fish has finally ended.
Nope. Quit hurting me. All right. I understand that Mr. Hardiman is not available to take advantage of Council Item 1004. Are there any items we'll now consider the consent agenda?
Mayor, I am not going to pull 1030, which is authorizing a contract with Ethos, but because it's on consent, a point of privilege, if I may, I want to just acknowledge that today we will be seeking authorization for that contract to allow Ethos to become the new operator of the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center. Charles Lewis, the executive director, Michelle Bas-Barba, the artistic director, and Jedediah Chavez, the development director, are all here, along with Todd Lofgren, who has worked tirelessly at Parks to make this happen. I just want to acknowledge and thank them all for their good service.
Thank you very much. I would like, I would like to pull back 1010, or pulled for a substitute. So we're pulling 1010 for consideration of a substitute later. Any other items? Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Saltzman? Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Again, I want to just welcome the Ethos team. We were all saddened when the prior nonprofit operator hit financial difficulties and had to wind down. I want to acknowledge that the mayor and his arts team have been extremely helpful every step of the way in planning this transition. We did a public process, and out of that came what we think is the strongest application. And before us is a contract which is of 2 years duration, I think with a one-year review. We have very high hopes for Ethos. We think they're a good fit, and we're grateful they've stepped up to help us lead this project forward. So I'm very pleased to vote aye.
Adams.
Thank you. This is a facility that means a lot to me and the neighborhood that I live in. So I appreciate your willingness to take it on. Thank you for your good work in helping to make it happen from the Parks point of view. And thank you, Commissioner Fish, to you and your team for your leadership and problem solving on this issue. North Portland is very grateful. Aye. Consent agenda is approved. That gets us to the time certain. Item number 1005.
Accept the Citizen Review Committee report on the structure of the Independent Police Review Division with recommendations.
Is it a second?
This is a second reading, right?
No.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, sorry, sorry. All right.
That comes later.
Sorry.
We'll get there.
Getting ahead of myself. Welcome. Who would like to go first?
Good morning, Mayor. I'm Commissioners. I'm Mary Beth Baptista, and I'm the Director of the Portland City Auditor's Independent Police Review Division. When I started here in May of 2008, the hot topic at the time was the performance review of IPR and CRC done through a contract with the mayor by the then mayor Potter by Eileen Luna Firebaugh. This performance review
was a lengthy document that included a lot of recommendations, some of them controversial, some of them not so, for IPR and CRC, and called into question some of our policies and our effectiveness. This was quite an issue for the community. This was quite an issue for the council at the time, for the auditor, as well as IPR and CRC. So it was actually one of the first things I wanted to dive into when I began. And so so along with the Citizen Review Committee, there was a decision made to form a work group just specifically to look at the Eileen Luna Firebaugh report, go through each and every recommendation so there could be a full discussion, and then hopefully at the end of the line, a report from CRC looking at those recommendations and determining which recommendations they would like to forward to IPR and CRC. So we began that endeavor back in September of 2008, and after several, well, I wouldn't say several years, several months, we are here and we have released last month we released the Citizen Review Committee report on the structure of the Independent Police Review Division with recommendations, and that is what we are here today. And so we have two of the work group members, Michael Bigham and Mark Johnson. The chair of the work group was Joanne Jackson. Both Joanne and Mark, I think it's notable, both Joanne and Mark, their terms ended right as we were completing this report, and they continued their service as volunteers, to make sure that they could see this report through because it was very important to them. Joanne went back to full-time work, so she is unfortunately not able to be here this morning, but we do have the opportunity to have both Mark and Michael here to present.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. As has been said, I'm Mark Johnson. I live and practice law in Southeast Portland. I'm a former member of the CRC, and I was a member of the work group that developed this report. By the way of a couple of preliminary comments, first, Ms. Jackson and I remain available to you and to the committee to serve as resources as we go through this. There's obviously a great deal of information here to be absorbed, and Mr. Bigham and I are going to try to give you an overview of it this morning. Second, this has been a dynamic process. Some of what you see in this report will be familiar to you. Many of the recommendations that are contained in the report are already in implementation or already in process of being implemented. That's partly because Ms. Baptista was sitting in on all of our deliberations and has been very accommodating in terms of adopting recommendations as we've been going along to the extent that she was able to do so. And also Commissioner Leonard had a set of amendments to the ordinance and so on that were before you, I believe, a couple of months ago. And once again, Ms. Baptista served on the work group that developed those proposals and served as a liaison between the two work groups. So again, a lot of what you are seeing here has already been implemented through that process as well. As far as our process was concerned, as Ms. Baptista has already outlined, the Luna Firebaugh report came out in January of 2008. It was the product of an RFP that was put out in 2007 asking for a review of the Independent Police Review Division, a review of the complaint handling process, a review of CRC, and a set of recommendations for action. Dr. Luna Firebaugh's recommendations are included as an appendix to this report. Those of you who were on the council when the report came out, I'm sure we'll recall that it generated a great deal of response. There was a response from the auditor, a response from the director of IPR, who was a different director at that time, responses from the public. And what we did in the course of this work group was we collected all of those responses together in one place, went through them in a detailed fashion, and created an outline of all of the various recommendations and all of the various comments that were made with regard to the way that the police discipline system worked. Out of that process came the six primary focus areas of our work, which are outlined for you on page 2 of the report in the beginning of the executive summary. They are basically the complaint process, policy development, staffing and training issues, outreach, transparency, and also mediation. And then once the material was organized, we worked through it in a systematic kind of way, keeping in mind always the goals of our work, which are outlined once again for you on page 10 of the report. This is the lens through which we tried to view each of these recommendations for change or each of the comments that we reviewed, whether it would improve or streamline the complaint process, whether it would support safeguarding the rights of citizens, whether it would clarify the purpose, power, and duties of the Independent Police Review Division, and finally, whether it would support and value the function of the Citizens Review Committee itself. Having gone through it in that way, we had a monthly and bimonthly meetings that extended over a 19-month period. They were all open to the public. Most or all of them were attended by representatives of Portland Cop Watch and the League of Women Voters. We published an interim report in March of this year, received public comment on the report, and what you have before you today is a synthesis of all of those discussions. We believe it provides a viable blueprint for strengthening Portland's police oversight system. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Bigham, who will talk about the specific recommendations that were made.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Mike Bigham. I'm the chair of the CRC. And I was a member of this work group also. It's a pleasure to be before you. In January of 2008, when the Luna Fireball report was issued, I was the newly elected chair of the CRC by about 2 weeks. And my head was really spinning because there was a tremendous outpouring of comment from the community. There were rebuttals from IPR Director Stevens and City Auditor Gary Blackmer. There was a lot of coverage in the media. But I think along with the CRC, we believed that a more measured response was necessary. And so we created the Structure Review Work Group to examine and report on all of the Luna Fireball recommendations. We defined six primary focus areas to be addressed and prepared our recommendations, which are before you now. You could read the recommendations for yourself, but I'll briefly run through the focus area and talk about them generally. First was the complaint process. We looked at how IPR and IAD process complaints and also how the CRC conducts appeals. Policy development. We looked at IPR and CRC reviewing Portland Police Bureau policies and making recommendations for improvement. Staff and training issues. We looked at training for IPR and CRC personnel. Adequate staffing for conducting outside investigations, providing an independent legal counsel to the IPR and CRC, and also providing a dedicated staff person to the CRC. We also asked to increase CRC terms to 3 years and to return bureau findings to unfounded, insufficient evidence, exonerated, and sustained, and add three new findings of policy failure, training failure, and supervisory failure. Fourth focus area was outreach. We talked about increasing CRC and IPR outreach activities to the community, and that would include also the city council. The fifth area was transparency, was to increase transparency to the community on how the CRC and the IPR do business. And sixth was mediation policy and procedures, which was looked at improving the mediation process, holding bureau members accountable, and making it more customer-friendly. As was mentioned before, I'm happy to say that a number of the recommendations have already been implemented by IPR or CRC or were included in the police accountability ordinance that you recently passed. The members of the ongoing stakeholders committee have received this report and are taking a look at it. I would expect them to report to council sometime in September. The CRC hopes that you will seriously consider our recommendations and include them in a future police accountability ordinance. Thank you.
But just a clarification on that. When we accept the report, we're not saying that we absolutely accept all of the recommendations.
I'm aware of that.
No, I'm just clarifying for myself and for the public.
Okay.
And also that, so the process then is that the stakeholders committee is going to look at all the recommendations and you together will bring back something for the council to consider.
That's correct.
Great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Were you through, Michael? Yes, I am. Thank you.
I had a question about the recommendation that says base the sustain rate as a proportion of all complaints. So I guess, are you saying there should be an artificial proportion of complaints that are sustained?
No. You want to explain how the sustain rate is? No, we're not creating an artificial sustain rate. What we're doing is changing the method of how it's measured.
So currently right now, and we discussed this briefly with our annual report, when we do our annual report, we look at a snapshot of what happened, for example, what we just did in 2009. And what we look at is we look at how many cases came back as sustained from those that were investigated. And what there's been some community feedback to that says instead of looking at what the sustained rate is from investigations, you should look at every complaint that's come through the door and then say how many of those have been sustained after an investigation.
Other discussion with council? All right. Anything else you want to say by way of presentation?
No, I just want to, yes, obviously. I think that this work group was a really good example of it was fresh people looking at this, and we had the benefit of really being removed from a lot of the controversy and a lot of the hype, if you will, regarding this report. And I think that really led us to have a more reasoned approach to the document, and I think that the end product is really a really valuable tool for us. Because we were able to just reasonably look at the report and look and see what made sense for the organization. And I think it was a really good collaborative effort between IPR and CRC. It showed how we can balance our work together. They did a lot of the original writing of it, and our staff did a lot of the editing. And so I think it was a really good experience for all of us to learn how we can share responsibilities and work together, but yet, you know, maintain our independence. So I felt that it was a very good experience.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Has anyone signed up to testify?
We have three people.
Okay.
Nastasha Pace, Steve Wilson, and Debbie Iona.
Good morning. Welcome back.
How did it end up just me, huh? Okay. Good morning. I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League would like to thank the Citizen Review Committee Structure Review Workgroup for the time and attention it devoted to researching and writing this report. We support nearly all of the CRC's recommendations and are encouraged by the fact that the Police Oversight Stakeholder Committee is considering many of them. Our oversight system is complicated and the learning curve is steep for new CRC members. Increasing the term length from 2 years to three will reduce the number of inexperienced members on the committee at any one time. In addition to adopting that CRC recommended change, we believe council also should increase the committee size by two to a total of 11 members. In addition to the time spent reading case files in preparation for appeal hearings, almost all CRC members serve on at least two work groups that meet monthly and focus on specific issues. Having more members to carry the load will enhance CRC's ability to make progress on accomplishing its goals for an improved oversight system and police bureau. Over the years, the CRC has had a number of resignations, leaving the committee shorthanded until the next recruitment process is completed. For this reason, we recommend that two reserve members be selected during that process. Reserve members could complete background checks and training and be ready to step in if someone finds it necessary to resign. CRC recommendations outlined in this report, the League thinks are especially important to adopt, include change the powers and duties of the CRC so it can make policy recommendations directly to the police bureau, dedicate funds for the CRC to use at its discretion for the purpose of carrying out its mission, assign a dedicated staff member to assist the full CRC and its work groups, change the standard of review and appeal hearings from reasonable person standard to preponderance of the evidence standard, return possible misconduct case findings to unfounded insufficient evidence. You heard Michael mention that one. establish guidelines that require IPR to conduct independent investigations in certain types of cases, and evaluate the possibility for an appeal or request for reconsideration of non-investigated complaints, IPR dismissals, minor complaints, and or Internal Affairs Division declines. There currently is a great deal of public concern about our oversight system and the police bureau. We hope you will be responsive to those concerns by adopting many of the recommended improvements when they come before you, hopefully next in the fall. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's a really interesting suggestion about the reserve member. I think that might work for some of our other committees and commissions as well, to have kind of members in waiting.
And we actually, the last time around, Director Baptista, there was one particularly outstanding young woman who was, you know, didn't make the cut, but Mary Beth asked, would she kind of be on the ready? And then a few months later, you know, sure enough, someone needed to get a new job in another state, and she was able to step in. So it was really worked out well.
And that might help people figure out whether they really want to be on a committee, and also to gather some more information about the committee so that they're able to step right in there in other situations too. I like that.
Thank you. Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Is any of our other people who signed up here?
They would back you.
I can't hear you. All right. Then let's move to a vote to accept the report. Do I hear a
motion?
Second? Been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote?
Saltzman?
Well, I appreciate this report. It's very thorough, and I appreciate the work the CRC members, both current and former, have put in on this effort, and as well as the IPR office. There's definitely a lot of recommendations here, and I think many of them should become our operating procedures, or your operating procedures, I should say. So please support this report. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you. Thank you very much for your work on the report. There's a lot of work, and many of the folks who worked on it are here, and I appreciate that very much, not only that you put in all the time to research the report and write such a well-written and clear report, but also to come here to testify today. That's very, very generous of you in volunteer time. And it's good to have independent citizen oversight as well as independent staff oversight. As we work together to build confidence and trust between the police and the community, I note that particularly that Irene Konev is doing a great job of bringing awareness of the work of the IPR to the wider community, and that her hiring and indeed your whole team. Also, I very much appreciate the CRC's liaisons to council and Rochelle Silver's work in keeping me informed of what you're doing. I think that's a great step forward. The forum that you did was wonderful. What we need to make sure happens as we move forward is that all of this good work turns into results. And so I'm very glad to see that to hear that the recommendations are going to go to the stakeholder committee, and that we'll be coming back with some concrete actions that council can take to alleviate any lingering distrust so that we get to a more open and transparent process. I certainly appreciate everybody's work towards that, and we'll keep working on it. I also wanted to offer the assistance of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. One of the recommendations was to look into which cases should go to mediation and how the mediation process works, and if our mediation team in ONI can be of assistance in any way, we'd be glad to help. Aye.
Fish.
Thanks for your good work. Aye.
Adams.
Wow, this is a lot of work for a volunteer group, and superb work. So I want to thank you all for your commitment to it. It's an excellent report, and thank you. I also want to thank the staff that has helped you complete it, and I am pleased to vote aye. So approved. All right, that gets us to the regular agenda. I'm sorry. Let's do the substitute. Can you please read item 1010?
Grant revocable permit to Lentz Neighborhood, Inc. to close Southeast Ramona Street between Southeast 92nd Avenue and a dead end from 7 a.m. until 4 p.m. on July 18, 2010.
This was just a technical change. I move the substitute.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Please call the vote on the substitute motion.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Substitute is approved. Can you please call the vote on the substituted item for 1010?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Aye.
Fritz?
It's good that this was pulled to highlight this wonderful neighborhood event in the Lentz neighborhood. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1010 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 1032?
Authorize a change order to contract with Stacy and Whitbeck, Inc. to purchase and install a wheel truing machine for the Portland streetcar and direct the Office of Management and Finance to finance, under certain conditions, the purchase.
Welcome back, Ms. Deedy.
Good morning. Excuse me. For the record, I'm Vicki Deedy with the Bureau of Transportation and the city's project manager for Portland Streetcar. One of the challenges in operating a streetcar in the city of Portland, because of a lot of leaves and some oil that gets in the street and some of the slopes, is that our wheels get flat spots when brakes are applied in a kind of a quick manner. And I think you've probably heard this if you've been on the streetcars, that ka-thump, ka-thump, ka-thump thing you hear all the time. So to ensure a safe and enjoyable ride to the public, Portland Streetcar schedules wheel truing twice a year. And that truing gets rid of the flat spots and makes the wheels round again. A wheel truing machine was included in the original budget for Portland Streetcar, but because of concerns primarily from the Federal Transit Administration about sufficient contingency for construction activities, the item was deleted from the project, but it's remained on our list of highly desirable items. The project currently is carrying, at this point in time, $5.7 million in contingency, and we started out at $6 million. By February of 2011, we will be far enough along on the Broadway Bridge, which is really the highest risk piece of our project, to be able to commit the $2 million from contingency for the wheel truing. Now, should for some reason that contingency not be available, OMF has agreed to borrow the funds needed to buy the machine, and PDOT has committed to providing the general transportations needed to pay back any part of the loan not covered by the contingency. We have not owned a wheel truing machine at all. Our 10-vehicle fleet, what we have to do is when it's time for the wheels to be trued, we have a crane that lifts the vehicle, and the wheels are taken off, and they're shipped to a TriMet facility where they do the truing for us. Now, as TriMet's fleet gets larger and larger, our ability to make sure that we get those cars back when we really want them becomes less and less. I mean, TriMet does a great job, but they've got their own issues that they have to deal with. So the labor costs for Portland Streetcar and the TriMet cost for the truing average is about $8,000 each time we do this. And if we had our own machine on site, the labor costs would go down to $800 to $900 per true. It would be just our own costs. From an economical standpoint, this transaction really makes sense when we have about 15 cars. We currently have 10. Next year we'll have 11 when the prototype is commissioned, and then in 2012 we'll have 17 vehicles for the Loop project. And if you take into account the cost of borrowing on this, it's in fiscal year 16-17 that really substantial savings accrue to the Portland Streetcar project to the tune of $400,000 or $500,000 a year. The maintenance facility or expansion that's currently being constructed has been designed to permanently install this truing machine. And from an accountability perspective, it's prudent to have the contractor building the facility also be responsible for procuring and installing the truing machine. So just in case something goes wrong, you don't have people pointing fingers at other people. And because of the long lead time needed to procure this machine, it's necessary for us to authorize this order now as opposed to waiting till February of 2011, where we really know where the contingency will be. So by having our own wheel truing machine, not only will we save money over the life of the equipment, but we will also reduce the downtime for our vehicles and allow us to have even better service. Just for some perspective, where we are in the project, so you can get a feel for if the contingency that's remaining is sufficient, and I think it is. As of the middle of June, 63% of the water main work has been completed, 58% of the sewer work, and it's always that underground work where you have the most unknowns, and then 21% of the civil and the track work is done. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
It looks like we're buying the machine from a company in New York. Is there not a local company?
No, not at all.
So, and what was the process to decide to buy it from this?
Well, Stacy Whitbeck is our contractor for this, and it's their responsibility to do the procurement for the machine. So they are the ones that did the investigation about who makes them, where they're at, and what the prices are. And then they bring that back to the project team, and we evaluate that and give a yay or nay.
Thank you.
All right. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on 1032? Carla, can you please call the vote on 1032?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Thank you.
Can you please read the title and call the vote for item number 1033?
Authorize execution of a successor labor agreement with Laborers Local 483 relating to terms and conditions of employment of represented employees in the Recreation Bargaining Unit. Saltzman?
Well, I'm pleased to support this agreement. When we last had this before us, I think it was probably 3 weeks ago, I raised an issue that I'm still very concerned about with respect to our larger bargaining unit, the DCTU, and that is a 40-year-old practice of paying overtime when people work less than 40 hours a week, costing us about $3 to $4 million a year. So this is an issue I felt I had to flag last week, even though this agreement itself with Laborers 483 actually contains very little overtime. But this is an issue that we do need to tackle with our bargaining unit. I think we need to work out a common sense overtime payment practice, one that is consistent with what I think people understand, that you work 40 hours and then you get paid overtime. And given the $3 to $4 million in general fund resources that practice has cost us, it's something in budget shortfall times we have to come to grips with. But it's not, that's really the in the negotiations we have to deal with DCTU in the future, and it doesn't really affect the agreement with Laborers 483 here. So I'm pleased to support this agreement today. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I share Commissioner Saltzman's concerns. For me, the issue of the overtime is a wellness issue. I'm in charge of employee wellness, and in particular with sick time, if an employee's been off sick, then we really don't want them to be asked to work overtime while they're still trying to recover and catch up from being away. So that is the most concern to me of the overtime issues, and I certainly believe that somebody who works more than their designated shift hours should get paid overtime, or somebody who comes in during a vacation should be paid overtime. But the sick time issue for me is the crucial one. But this is the Laborers 483 contract. They do a lot of very difficult work, and I'm been very impressed with Laborers 483 members over the time that I've known them, and that their diligence, their passion for the work. And as Commissioner Saltzman says, there isn't a major overtime issue in this contract. There is a Me Too clause that's both positive and negative, that if the DCTU and the other unions get more, then that comes to the laborers also. And similarly, if there are concessions that are made, then that would be reopened with this contract. I particularly appreciate that the contract sets the cost of living adjustment floor at 0%. In other words, if there is no inflationary factor, then there is no cost of living raise, and that seems very rational and reasonable to me. And so I appreciate the laborers who are rational and reasonable, and I greatly appreciate the work that's been done by both park staff and human resources and the commissioners and the council on this issue. Aye.
Fish.
I was not here when this came before council on the first reading, when I naively picked the dates for my vacation. I thought I picked a week of low controversy. It turned out I probably misjudged that. There were a number of issues that apparently brought the temperature up. As the commissioner in charge of parks, this contract and the people affected work for my bureau. And so I appreciate all the comments that have been made by my colleagues. We do think we have a special relationship with the employees who are also members of Local 483. They do great work for the Bureau and for the citizens. And I think it's worth observing that in these times of very tough budget choices and the toughest recession in my lifetime, this contract contains shared sacrifice. In year one, the employees covered will receive no increase. And potentially, the way it's structured in years two and three, employees could also receive no increase. And that's important because not only did they forego a wage increase in year one, but they agreed to reduce the floor for calculating the minimum CPI, consumer price index increase, in years two and three to zero. So under this agreement, they could also potentially have no increases in years two and three. And when we talk about shared sacrifice during tough times, this is exactly what we mean, where our labor partners working hand in hand with us find ways to share the pain during times when we have fewer dollars to spend on vital services. I know from the materials I've reviewed that there was a healthy debate about the overtime issue. And the last time this came up, as someone who was involved in labor relations for 20 years, my iron rule is that we discuss those things privately, not publicly, particularly when they are relate to strategy of the city. And I do appreciate the comments of my colleagues, but I will not make any public comments on this because I think when you're in active negotiations, it's better that those comments be made privately. 90 employees are covered by this agreement, plus or minus. And as has been observed, this contract has a unique provision, which is a flex time provision, which is, in plain English, is a way in which people who are asked to work more than 40 hours can get some time off in lieu of overtime. And as a result, we've had very little overtime expenses incurred under this contract. So whether this is an issue you care about or not, on the overtime side, as my colleagues have noted, this is not a contract which really raises that issue in a significant way. So I'm grateful for the team at HR, Yvonne and Anna, and all the people who are at the table on our behalf. And I'm equally grateful for our labor partners, Buzz Beadle and the whole team at the laborers who have negotiated in good faith to get to this agreement. And I'm pleased to vote aye. Thank you.
Adams.
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance first reading, 1034.
Amend contract with Berger Abum Engineers, Inc. for additional work and compensation for the Giles Lake Pump Station Reliability Improvements, project number E08877.
Mayor, members of the council, the Giles Lake Sewage Pump Station on Northwest Front Avenue services the industrial area of Northwest Portland. A malfunction of this pump station would cause a backup in the area's combined sewer system and would also result in an unauthorized sewer overflow into the Willamette River. This facility hasn't been upgraded since its construction in the 1960s. This project will upgrade its electrical systems and also add new control systems, lighting, and backup power generation. During the course of the work, the Environmental Services maintenance staff identified additional issues that expanded the scope of work. Those include evaluating the replacement of the 50-year-old pumping system and other equipment. So the estimated cost of this contract amendment is $52,293, and funds are available in the Environmental Services budget. So this is a first reading, and if there's any further questions, we have BES staff to answer questions. I think. Oh, yeah, we do. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Then this will move to second reading. Okay. The next item on the agenda is item 1035, second reading.
Before we do that, President of the Council, well, did we already make you President of the Council while I was not here?
Yes, you missed that vote.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can still vote.
I'd like to state for the record that I support Commissioner Saltzman being president of the
Council. Okay, thank you. So
there was a huge question about that when you were gone for the vote.
Well, you know, and I haven't missed a vote yet, I don't think.
It was an unspoken concern.
Oh, okay. Well,
well,
sorry, Leonard. Sorry,
I
should raise that again.
I thought in the second panel, the testimony of her chief of staff was flatly contradictory to that. So perhaps there's been a change of heart. I don't know.
Sorry, I mentioned it.
We're all relieved to be out of the impression of Commissioner Fish.
So next item is 1035, second reading. Please call the roll.
I'll read the title. 1035, clarify composition of police review board and applicability of code provisions. Saltzman? I'm sorry, Leonard.
Well, I appreciate the approach the police bureau is taking in interacting with not just the council and the public in general, but particularly the new work group that we've heard alluded to here in an earlier ordinance that is going through IPR processes and procedures, the Citizen Review Commission's process and procedures, with the goal of sometime this fall making recommendations for further potential changes to the review oversight process of the Portland Police Bureau. That approach by the Police Bureau, I think, is healthy, and where the professionals are weighing in and giving their objective advice how best to make their processes balanced and fair, while at the same time making sure officers always know that they have not only the right but the responsibility to make split-second decisions without fearing overly being second-guessed by those of us on the council or citizens' oversight groups or whoever. Those are tough balancing acts to make. And I think in those questions of oversight where the Police Bureau is a full and credible and participating partner, they should get the benefit of any doubt of any requests they make. On this point, I think that they have made the case that of the three members that they have on the police review committee that will take effect September 1st, they would prefer to remove one member of the Police Bureau and insert another member of the Police Bureau, and I think that that given their approach to oversight at this point, that ought to be recognized. And it does not in any way, as I've said many times, water down or dilute the more important change, which was to make sure the IPR director was a sitting member of the review board with full voting rights, which didn't happen before the council adopted the IPR changes in March, and two, that the citizen member or members that are appointed to the Police Review Board are not appointed by the Police Bureau any longer. They're appointed by the auditor and confirmed by the council. That was the nature of the significance of the change that occurred on that particular aspect in the IPR reforms the council adopted in late March of this year. So based on all those reasons, I think that this is a change that makes sense and is balanced, and I vote aye.
Fritz.
I voted for this amendment when it was an emergency ordinance, both because it was my duty to do so, having asked for the amendments, the minor amendments on the language, and also because I thought it was the right thing to do. I still support the change to September 1st. However, we now have more information than we had 3 weeks ago, and the stakeholder group has met. This change was just adopted in March 31st of this year. And the stakeholder group was set up to encourage transparency and communication between the community and the police, as well as to review changes to the IPR ordinance. And the members of the stakeholder committee have expressed concern about the process as well as the actual change. And I have concerns both about the process and about the change. I was willing to vote for this based on the police chief's desire stated before that it would be helpful to him. However, the committee pointed out that the Park Report twice recommended against this change, and also in thinking about it more, as I have thought about it a lot over the past 3 weeks, I think there's an advantage, even though it's more work to have two commanding officers looking through a file. That can be a good thing. And I know when I was doing peer review as a nurse on documentation on outcomes, that having peers, that the non-assigned, the non-commanding officer, responsible, forget what the RU stands for, but having a peer look over decisions can be a very helpful thing for the organization as well as for the outcomes. And so I don't think that this is an administrative housekeeping amendment. I think it's obviously significant, and although I think there are compelling arguments that have been put forward by members of the stakeholder committee, and therefore I can't support the change at this time. No.
Fish.
Again, I was not present for the first reading on this, so I have gone back and reviewed the record, and I've also had a chance to read correspondence that came in on this, particularly from Dan Handelman, and I've had a chance to meet with the auditor and the IPR director just to make sure I understood the issues. I'm going to associate myself with the comments of Commissioner Leonard, who said that this is a balanced approach, and I agree that it is. I'll go one step further. Since the issue that has caused some dispute has to do with whether this change will enhance or diminish accountability, which is the question that has been put on the table, I actually believe, based on the work that I've done as a lawyer, as a labor lawyer, and involved in all kinds of administrative procedures, that this has the potential to strengthen, not diminish, accountability, because the commander or captain with direct involvement is at the table with the other committee members and therefore is in a position to be held accountable as well. So my instinct on something like this, beyond wanting to make sure I understand the issues, is to look to our team to see, you know, where the various leaders within this building are. And the fact that the chief of police, the auditor, the IPR director, and Commissioner Leonard, who has played a leadership role on this body moving these things forward, all are in accord with the proposal before us, gives me some confidence that we're on the right path. I take seriously the concerns of any advisory group. While we are not, we do not march in lockstep with recommendations from advisory bodies, we take seriously what their recommendations are, and we, and I think in this instance, we'll know better within a year whether those concerns are well-grounded or not. And as I've talked to the IPR director, if in the processing of these cases it's determined that this is an impediment and not an advantage, the composition that's being proposed, I'm sure the council can revisit this issue. And as to the process question, you know, I take those issues seriously as well, but I would note that the task force has had a chance to weigh in on this, which I think cures the major objection, which is that they didn't have a chance to be heard. Our job is to be respectful, to weigh the information that comes our way, but to make our own independent judgments. And I believe that, in fact, the proposal before us will strengthen, not weaken, accountability. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I asked for, or my vote last time was to allow time for the committee to meet again and to revisit the particular issue of whether the commanding officer should be a voting member of the police review board for reviewing a case of an officer who serves under him or her. And that meeting did occur. It seems like there was not consensus achieved amongst the citizen members and amongst the professional members. And while maybe I was hoping for too much to expect there would be some harmony on this issue, there isn't. And I guess I give a lot of deference to Chief Reese and Commissioner Leonard and the auditor and the IPR director. I'm still, what troubles me most about the change we're making here is that it's so sharply recommended against by the Park reports of 2003 and 2006. And I cannot, you know, we hired that group to use their professional judgments to give us recommendations how to best make our police review process work and work well. And again, with all respect to the other parties, I don't feel it's wise on this point where they so sharply call it out as something that we should not do. I'm not willing to support this, so I also will vote no.
Adams.
I've been around the building a fair number of years, and I've seen many different variations of efforts to improve accountability and the operations of the Portland Police Bureau. I have never in my time here at City Hall seen an auditor who is as demonstrably committed to moving forward accountability policies and policies to create change and improvements in the police bureau as I have with Auditor LaVon Griffin-Belay. So I am, and she's relatively new on the job, and she has sponsored and requested this change, and I'm going to let her run with it, and I'm going to support it. I also know that she will be vigilant in reviewing the impacts of this change for any unintended negative consequences. So it's for that reason that I vote aye. So approved. Where are y'all from? Huh? That's great. Well, welcome. We welcome your input. Look forward to hearing it. You'll have to come back and share it with the City Council. You came here just in time because we're going into recess. We're recessed till 2 o'clock. Yeah.